everyone, I'm Troy Dodds, and welcome to the On The Record podcast presented by The Western Weekender. On this podcast, I'm joined by special guests who all have such great stories to tell about Penrith and the role they've played in our city. They are Penrith stories told by Penrith's people. Today, my special guest is Max Cowan. The Cowan family name is synonymous with Penrith, and especially Panthers, where Max was the marketing guru during what many would describe as the league's club's heyday. Max has some wonderful memories of Penrith and of his time at Panthers. Max, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Troy. It's great to be here.
First question we always ask, where and when were you born? Where did you grow up first few years?
Sadly, I was born in Parramatta. But very quickly, my parents sort of got a bit sensible and moved to Kingswood or Cambridge Park. It's sort of right on the border there when I was about 2 years old.
Really, you don't remember that other place?
No, not at all. It's just on my birth certificate, which is not great.
I know you moved to Kingswood, as you mentioned, and then the family moved to Reserve Street for about a year or so, and then onto Station Street. Some pretty iconic street names in the local area. Tell me about growing up in Penrith in those years, 60s, early 70s.
For me, it's like it was idyllic. I just loved it. It was a great place to be growing up. When we moved to Kingswood, there was, I think, three houses on the street and, you know, in the area, not a great deal. So we had, you know, as kids, we had so much freedom. We could go practically anywhere and feel safe. And it was just happy times, you know. And that was true right through, I guess, until mid high school, when the sort of bright lights of the city started to beam our way. But really, growing up out here and riding our bikes around Penrith and down to the river in summer, or riding bikes home at night from Jamison Park football training to Kingswood, like it was just, the memories are just so good.
You actually did a blog a few years back. I've read a few of those.
Yeah, pieces. 365 short memories.
365 short memories, and that comes through in that as well. A pretty memorable child and a childhood and a happy one.
Yeah, very happy one. It was, I often look back and think, you know, I just feel really blessed at the sort of environment that we had to grow up in and the sort of place that my parents built for us. You know, not in terms of the physical sort of attributes of where we lived, but in how we interacted with each other.
Your dad, of course, is Roger Cowan, who became CEO of Panthers in 1965. We'll chat more about him later. But
sure,
when was the first time the word Panthers you remember hearing around the kitchen table? Because it was pretty much in your whole life.
Well, basically, I have no memory except with that in mind. Look, I do remember going to watch Roger play football with the team. So I can remember one game in particular, Wentworthville, when, you know, Mum had to come and try and find us because we were crawling around in the sewage tunnels or something, you know. But I do remember that. So not that the word Panthers was ever used in the way that it's used now. It was, the team or the club or whatever. It wasn't used as that sort of proper noun too much.
You wouldn't have known it at the time, but, you know, pretty significant moment when Roger joins Panthers in 1965 to kick off a very long career, but it changed the trajectory of the family, I guess.
Well, it did. It certainly took away a lot of his time with us. Prior to that, when he was teaching he was always busy. Like, he had an ice cream run and, you know, I used to go on the ice cream run with him sometimes on weekends. He had the fruit shop
on High Street,
just up near where the Commonwealth Bank was. So he was always busy, but the club just took an extra lot of time out of it. But you know, we still felt great. I think the pressure was on Mum more than anything, and that was so for the next 40 years.
Yeah, yes.
So she was the glue that held everything together.
Still got time for family holidays, of course. And I was reading one of your in one of your blogs, or I think even maybe in your eulogy for Roger, about a trip to Port Macquarie that was one of your favourite holidays, but very different for the kids than the actual intention of the holiday for your mum and dad.
Absolutely right. And you know, we only found out about this years later, but it was a fantastic holiday. I just felt so blessed. I can remember walking out along the rocks at Port Macquarie, you know, the pier that goes out there, and thinking, like, how good is this? How good is life? And you know, we were doing things like creating board games together and all sorts of great things as a family. But later on, I found out that they were up there because they were running away from creditors, fearful that their house was going to sort of get repossessed. And he was up there out on the road trying to sell, I think it was encyclopedias. We'd be playing games like searching through the car, looking for pennies.
Yeah,
you know, so it was a struggle, but we didn't feel that struggle.
Great story, I guess, in terms of how they protected you guys from the realities of life. Well, sometimes.
Made this situation that was very adverse into for us, you know, a time of bonding and sharing and caring. It was, yeah.
You say Roger was always busy, but I imagine it became a lot busier in 1967. Penrith enter the first grade competition, so that sort of changes a lot for Penrith.
Well, I can remember, you know, being at home with Mum late at night, and him not being there before 67. Like, he was working hard to get the team into that elevated position. Him amongst others, of course, there was Merv and there was Harold Corr and Bill Chapman that, you know, really put in huge amounts of work to make that happen. But it was a big celebration. I can remember, you know, the club magazine coming out that year with "We're In" or something. I can't remember the words, but it was just two words on the front of it. And from there on, it was on. Like, it was full on.
And for the family, a big move a few years later, you moved to Emu Plains, which ultimately becomes home for a long time for the family, not sort of for you necessarily, because I know you...
No, we moved to Reserve Street, which was just behind the club on Station Street near the swimming pool there, and then to Station Street, which was around the corner, and that was fantastic. And then a bit later, in late, must have been 72, I think, we moved up to Emu Plains, where he'd bought a property that had sort of a couple of shacks on it, and built on one, and I was fortunate enough to get to live in the other one. So during my late years at high school, I had quite a good bedroom. Yeah.
They would call it that these days, a teenager's retreat.
Yeah.
It might be. And a couple of years after they're moving there, you actually, it's time to obviously find a job. Now, you went to the world of being a superannuation clerk, I think is where you kick off your career.
I did. It was a very, very patchy career, let me tell you. I wanted to go to university, but then I really couldn't afford to support myself to do that, and so I just went and got a job for 2 years, and in that way I could get some support to go to uni. So I went and worked for a superannuation company in the city. It was Edward Lumley and Associates, which was part of Lloyd's of London.
Any thoughts though at that point of working in, you know, with Roger at Panthers, or it didn't even cross the conversation?
Well, it couldn't, because like in all our growing up years, as much as we'd be pulling on his coattails and saying, listen, let us do this, let us do this, let us do this, he would make sure that we were distanced from that. We got no advantage at all. Like, we'd pester him to take us into the dressing room. No way.
Okay.
You know, whereas Trapper, who was a good friend of ours, his dad was the coach. Well, he was allowed to go in the dressing room, or he was allowed to be the ball boy.
But
that was never the case with us. And Roger, up until the time in 91, when as a family we had a pretty hard year, he was against having management have any relations working at the club. So once again, although I had this idea about wouldn't it be great to work there, it was never on for me.
You do start a career in clubs, though, a couple of years later, 1975, at Balmain Leagues Club.
At Balmain Leagues Club, and I found out very quickly that the people who worked on the floor at the club were fantastic, but the people who were the managers of the club weren't so great.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. When I started working at Balmain, I felt very quickly picked on by the bar manager there. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling, and I had a feeling then, I still have the same feeling, that it was my name that caused me to be picked on.
Okay.
I thought, the bar manager thought, he's this guy, blah, blah. And, he did some bad things.
Right, yeah, okay. So not the best time work-wise.
I enjoyed it. I really loved working in clubs. I loved serving, the members and the guests. And I loved the other people who worked there. And at that time, it was a very vibrant place to work. It was great. We worked with there were some fantastic casuals there, like really quirky people.
Work and life continues through the late 70s and early 80s, of course, and you meet your partner Chris in 1982. How did you two meet?
We worked in the same place in the public service, and we connected, and she had two young girls at the time, and eventually we joined up and became a family.
A great love story begins.
I don't know about a great love story, but certainly one that's lasted. Yeah.
In the background, of course, Roger is taking Panthers to the next level, the big move to the current Mulgoa Road site.
Yeah.
Do you remember conversations with Roger during this period? And there were people that were calling him mad for doing it. But he had this vision. You look across there today, well, you can see where that's gone. But at the time, a pretty risky almost decision to build what he wanted to build.
Look, I can remember him just talking about some of the difficulties he had in getting that pass, getting that through the board, that purchase. He didn't speak too much about people calling him crazy. I sort of remember some of those conversations. And certainly, as I was growing up, when I'd go around Penrith, I'd feel like, I don't know, when I was introduced to sort of girlfriends' fathers and things like that, it was always, you're Roger's son. And I'd naturally get drawn into all these sort of weird conversations and judgments about things that he may or may not be doing. But that particular one, he worked pretty hard on getting that through. I certainly remember that. And it was, a big move for Penrith. Mm. It wasn't just a big move for the club. Eventually, it was it sort of pivoted Penrith in a certain way.
Well, he created what Penrith is now known for. Panthers is, if you're a footy fan, Panthers, the footy team. But if not, then you just know Panthers as this club.
Not only in Penrith, but, long ways away.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Panthers opens, of course, and things are going well on Mulgoa Road. But you mentioned earlier a pretty tough year for your family in 1991, and your brother Peter passes away.
Yep.
Tough time. What kind of emotions did you go through at that period of time?
Well, look, we had plenty of warning. He was quite sick, and so we, we spent, and Roger in particular spent a lot of time with him in the hospital while he was still working, very hard out here. And he was in at St. Vincent's Hospice. And so we had time to prepare ourselves. So a little bit like the adversity, that they were facing going to Port Macquarie, there was this adversity and we just gathered together and, we tried to make a bit of joy out of it. Like in his last moments, Pete was he was talking crazy nonsense, but in the way Pete would, he was quite different to the rest of us. He was an extrovert and all the rest of us were introverts.
Okay.
Well, Mum's sort of a little bit of a party girl, but
yeah.
Pete was very much an extrovert, and as he was sort of leaving this world, he thought he was in the back of a taxi cab somewhere, and he was swearing at the cab driver, and like it was, and then he just left us, and you know, all we could do, he couldn't hear, he couldn't see, he couldn't speak. Well, he could speak, but it was just, and all we could do was just hold his hand and stroke it, and so it was tough, but it sort of got us really closely together.
And I guess left with wonderful memories of growing up together. You mentioned that childhood earlier. What was the difference in age between you two?
Pete was 5 years younger than me.
Okay.
But he was a troublemaker. He would pick fights with all of us.
Right.
And, and then pretend he was the one who was sort of the victim.
Yes. Okay. So 91 actually becomes a big year in your life for other reasons as well, because you actually join Panthers as an employee or maybe a contractor at that time,
yeah.
But at least in the Panthers workforce for the first time. So how did that conversation originally happen, and how did you end up at Panthers?
Well, it was interesting because of that struggle that particular year with the family. It was a very emotional time for all of us. But Roger was also struggling because the move to Mulgoa Road had created massive growth in terms of sales, but that wasn't accompanied by increases in profits. In fact, they were going down, and he, for quite a long time, was struggling with what to do. And look, after Pete died, a few weeks later, he came to me and said, "Look, I want to do this with Panthers. I want to make some big changes there." And he gave me this giant folder of all the stuff he'd written about the sorts of changes that he wanted to do. What was the theory behind them, the philosophies that he wanted to sort of invoke there, and the sort of culture that he wanted to build. And he said, "I want you to have a read of this and see what you think." And so I read through it, and when I read through it, I went, "Wow, I didn't think Roger was this sort of bloke." Like, you know, we would argue politically all the time, and what he was doing was quite radical. What he wanted to do was quite radical, and this excited me. I thought this would be a fantastic place to go to, and. He basically said, in doing this, what I need to do, because the whole idea was to reduce the levels between the customer and the board, basically. So cut out a whole lot of middle management,
sure,
and create those people who were sort of running a bar here or a restaurant here or doing the cleaning, make them the management of their own team. So they were all those people who were sort of at a lower level of management to be given the authority and the responsibility to run their own teams.
Yep.
And that meant that there were a whole bundle of people who had no real experience at doing this. And basically me and another guy were engaged to help them get through that change. Now, Roger put the fact that I was going to come on board to the board, because I think they were unanimous in saying, yeah, okay, because I knew them all reasonably well. They knew me.
Yeah. Your kicking off of the restructuring of Panthers...
Well, I didn't kick it off. I just came in and, you know, did a little bit of research and helped massage. It was meant to go for like 6 months, I think.
Sure. Well, yeah, I think you mentioned that 6 months you end up staying for many, many years, a couple of decades.
Yeah, basically.
In there.
Yeah.
But Panthers in the 90s, you know, if I remember back to Panthers in the 90s, whether it's, you know, the cables park at the back there with the water slides and the skiing, the free movie theatres, the restaurants started becoming Panthers at the 90s, in the 90s, lived up to that world of entertainment slogan that it was given.
Yep.
It became an absolute... mecca for everything, really, entertainment-wise in Penrith. An incredible time. An incredible time for you to be part of.
It was an incredible time. It had its challenges, without doubt. But there was always the idea, and Roger always had the idea that, like, it wasn't just a poker machine palace. Even back in Station Street, there was plenty of entertainment going on there. Like, you know, one of the first clubs really to really push the entertainment side of the club industry. But yeah, right through the 90s, and you know, the fact that I joined in August 91.
Yeah.
And we'll premieres.
You're claiming that, or
well, I'd like to, but no. So it kicked off. Mm. You know, there was already great excitement and anticipation about the football team. I guess one of the sad things for me was that I found it a bit disarming that the football team was being quite successful, and the year before they'd made the grand final, and the year before that they'd made their first semi. I think it was. I can't remember exactly, but the progress to the 91 grand final really started in 84, when at the same time as the move to Mulgara Road, Roger finally got his way in having a single board look after a single management team to look after both the licensed club and the football club. And from that came that 5x5 plan. You know, we talk about Phil Gould's five-year plan.
Yeah.
Well, Rog and the team developed the 5x5 plan, which was to get five Penrith juniors representing Australia within 5 years. And that really focused on the juniors, and that led to that 91 grand final. So there was great excitement there, but the big disappointing thing was that, like, the average crowd for that year was 11,500.
Yeah, it's funny when you look back at those average crowds at a time when people pine for, they love the 90s in rugby league, but average crowds were actually pretty poor.
We were disgraceful.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, I can remember when the marketing of the football team came into my bailiwick, the average crowd, I think, for the year was like 5,500 for... It was really low.
Yeah.
So they were really exciting times, and plenty of times for me to sort of experiment with you know aspects of marketing, and particularly taking my math skills and using them to sort of do some research and to refine things and to measure how things work. And it was just so enjoyable.
Yep. Certainly. The golden era for the league's club, no question, in that period. You had magazines, the Panthers magazine coming out every month. It was a massive magazine. Yeah,
200,000 households.
Yeah, going everywhere, probably the most distributed product in the Penrith region at the time. As I mentioned, cables, movie theatres. Is there a particular thing that you were most proud of from a league's club perspective in the 90s that you got up and it happened?
In the league's club? Look, I think one of the things that we did that was quite powerful was we ventured into the inbound tourism market.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a team, and I think we were the first organisation in Penrith to do such a thing, to try and, you know, get tourists to come to, like, overseas tourists to come to this place, to Penrith and to Panthers. And we did that quite successfully for a couple of years. So that was one thing in particular. During that time, I don't know. I think it's the football team that really presented a lot of the challenges for me, in the marketing role.
Yeah.
And where a lot of energy was focused right through the 90s into the 2000s.
Yeah, I guess getting bums on seats, getting people into the stadium at a time when, you know, there wasn't every game on TV and everything like that, so you had a captive market to be able to get them there. It was just getting them there
There were a lot of challenges. Like, I think there was, I guess the marketplace around here had gotten used to being able to go for free.
Mm.
Like, there were free tickets everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember... when I sort of looked at it and thought, oh, this has got to stop. We can't be doing this. And so we changed that. And then, you know, there was the tragedy in 92 that affected things pretty badly. And then we came upon the Super League year in 95 when all the chatter started about that. And that Like we had shit smeared over the windows of the office, and Roger had an envelope full of toenails sent to him. Okay. Like, so it was quite an emotional period that got a lot of people offside. And then there was, you know, the other issues that came with the conflict in the board. So it was really challenging. And I sort of, one of the things I'm proudest of is that when we were the Wooden Spooners, I think it was in 2000 or 2000, was it 2001?
Maybe? 2001, yeah.
Yeah. That we had the same average crowd as when we were premiers back in 91. So I thought, okay, we've made some progress here.
Built well, yeah.
You know, so those sorts of things it sounds like small progress, but it was a lot of heartache.
Is there something in the Panthers world that we don't know about that you really wanted to get up during that time and it just never eventuated? Is there something that circled the memory banks of everyone and it just didn't happen?
Oh, bloody hell, that's a good question. I can't think of something. There were plenty of things that you know, were probably got knocked back in terms of innovations and so on. But there was so much going on at that time. And the relationship between all the people who were employed at Panthers, it was so inclusive and just so collaborative and collegiate that it was just a fantastic place to be. Everyone was growing and you know, I can't think of a better time in my life than that period there.
A great time, but you did mention it wasn't all smooth sailing.
No.
Rough seas probably lasted for a few years there. You mentioned the Super League War, which wasn't just about 97, as you mentioned. It was the years in the lead-up. The formation of the NRL, there was the Footy 5 board tilt that you mentioned in 2002, the Temby inquiry that followed. What kind of toll was this taking on you, Roger, and the family during all of this period?
Well, it was pretty tough. It was really tough. On Roger, it was particularly damaging. You know, I think after that inquiry, for the first time, he'd felt severe depression. You know, he just felt that, you know, basically his life's work had been completely smeared. And he'd never recovered. He never recovered from that. Now, part of his not recovering is some of it's his own fault because he wouldn't listen to some advice. Like, he was advised after the inquiry to take 6 months off or even a year off, come back, work for a year and then retire. But he went straight back to work.
Right.
And like, he probably wasn't as effective as he could have been. The whole culture of the place had shifted a fair bit, and that probably didn't suit him. So it was a terrible time to watch. It was very sad.
What about internally at Panthers? Was it a distraction in terms of
the Temby inquiry?
In terms of that staff unity as well, that you'd built that family unity, or was there a feeling that there was plenty of people behind Roger internally?
Internally, massive support. But the culture of the culture of Panthers started to shift a little bit, and then it started to shift a lot, and eventually, that whole feeling of everyone having the same purpose and the same drive and looking forward to achieve, you know, things that were basically much bigger than Panthers itself and bigger than us as individuals, that sort of shifted to be very individual focused. A lot of people became conscious of their own positions and their own getting their own needs met. And you know, you can do both of those things at the same time, but one started to take precedence over the other, and that's sort of what happened. And so the culture shifted to one that was wasn't great.
In the interest of transparency, and I wasn't the editor at this time, I'll make that point. The Western Weekender certainly put itself at odds with Roger and against Roger and went pretty hard.
Very.
Was that a difficult thing as well?
Very.
The hometown newspaper is taking that approach.
Well, particularly as the hometown newspaper, when it originally started, said that they were starting on the basis that it was a good news paper. It was about spreading the good news of Penrith. And then suddenly there was this drive. And Well, to us, it felt quite personally driven, and you know, some of the opinion articles that were written were very hurtful. There was one in particular that focused on a family Christmas, and it was just, you know, it was horrible. Yeah, I don't know what more I can say, but it really did. It had the effect they wanted to have, I guess.
Created a pretty significant rift, and people can read about it. There's the book on Roger, of course, that details a bit of that as well. Penrith win the comp in 2003. There's some great photos of Roger on the ground that seem to pop up all the time, I think, with him and John Lang and whatnot. Was that, I guess, I know it was a happy moment, but almost a giant sigh of relief after everything that had happened in the years that had followed? The timing was almost perfect in a way.
Well, actually it wasn't, because the big headlines came out about the Temby inquiry being imposed the articles by the Sydney Morning Herald came out just before, I think, in the week of the final, preliminary final, and proceeded for another 4 days leading up to the grand final. So there were big spreads about Roger's dishonesty and, you know, and so on. And I got a call from Bill Crichton from Sanyo, one day, and he said, "What's going on up there?" Like, I don't know where he was. He was away somewhere. But he saw these headlines and basically said, like, Sanyo were the major sponsor.
Yeah.
He said, what the hell's happening up there?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, while there was euphoria around that premiership, there was trouble brewing.
Yeah.
You know, and the Temby inquiry, of course, I think took place in 2004.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, so the worst was almost still to come as far as
the
inquiry itself.
Well, yeah. Rog was pretty naive about what that inquiry meant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he said, "Look, we've got all the answers," and he had this one folder of stuff about, you know, this is all the questions they could ask. Mm. Well, one folder, it was like they went through 10 years of his life, of my mum's life, of the club's life, with a fine tooth comb, and it wasn't one folder. It was, we had a room full of photocopied stuff that needed to go to the inquiry.
Mm.
So it was a very, very intense examination of you know, what he'd been doing.
But of course, in the end, cleared of any wrongdoing in terms of the inquiry.
Absolutely. I mean, they accused him of being secret, you know, having an obsession about secrecy, but. Mm. Like, he was a very private individual and very introspective and introverted. Didn't like being in the spotlight at all, particularly in a spotlight where it was a bad spotlight.
Sure.
While Temby didn't find anything at all for anyone to hang their hat on, the mud still sticks.
Sure.
And it has stuck since he's even passed away.
And in 2005, you mentioned about the toll that it took. It wasn't as though he was able to move on from it. He resigns in 2005.
Yeah.
What happened in the lead up to that decision? Because he made a comment around the time that basically, well, my enemies have won, almost.
He made that comment to the last AGM.
Mm.
basically said, well, if you set out to hurt me, then you've achieved what you wanted to achieve. You won. Look, I think he wanted to get out of the way of a new person joining. I also think there was a little bit of, at board level, I think there was a little bit of a ruckus going on where, you know, some of the board wanted him to move on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not too sure of that. But I do think there were some moves that sort of convinced him, well, now's the time for me to go. I don't think he should have, but, you know, how much that would have changed things, I don't know.
You stayed on board for a little longer,
mm-hmm.
A few more years. I'm guessing it was different?
It was very, very different. Like, you know, after Rog left, there was definitely a shift in everything about the club, really. You know, in a shift in the sort of aspirations that I think the club had. Like, after he left, Roger was a very, very big thinker. And and had dreamt big and had great vision, not only for Panthers but for Penrith. He loved Penrith, and but when he left, the vision shrank. There was definitely a move. We've got to. In fact, I think it was expressed very clearly by Don Feltzer, we've got to make the club smaller. We've got to make this. And, you know, perhaps that was a wise move because, you know, things like the GFC and things like that were causing sort of problem, and the extra taxations and so on were causing sorts of problems. But, yeah.
When you do finish up, what led to that decision? And how did you feel walking out of Panthers as an employee for the last time?
Look, I had quite severe health problems related to that. I was put under, you know, quite a lot of stress. I left in late 2010. Mm-hmm. I think I should have left in 2005 with Roger.
Yeah, sure.
Not that he was a protector of me or anything, but I could sense then that vibrant workplace, mm-hmm. and that non-judgmental and where you could be experimental and you could make mistakes and it would be all accepted, you know, in sort of the movement forward, that had all changed and it had become a place where, like I said, there was people protecting their individual scopes and their and you know, it just became hard to navigate. You know, it got quite difficult. It was just sad to watch. And I stayed on for an extra few years because I wanted to try and fight against it, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
I didn't have the same capability as Roger. I just like to sit down and do my work and get on with it. But he was able to push through things.
I guess it can be hard too because you, when things like that end, you tend to focus on the end. But in reality, like the real story is what you built through the 90s and that early 2000s period. Because it changed. You mentioned it changed Penrith. It changed Panthers. It set Panthers up for what it is today. So you must look back on that and go, well, that's the legacy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do look, and the legacy is not only there, but it's with, like, I can't imagine how many people had gone through that Panthers the Panthers employment and came out of there with much better skills and were much more marketable, got better jobs. There's just so many people had great advantage of being in that place at that time with that leader and taking advantage of it. An enormous number of people. And I'm sure they're all, certainly the ones that I've spoken to, they just think about that time. You know, I remember at Roger's funeral, we were talking about those times and someone said, oh, they were great times. And the person who was the gaming manager at that time came in and said, look, they weren't great times. They were the best times. Mm. And they were. They were fantastic.
You have mentioned, you've called him Roger and Rog throughout this conversation. That doesn't just come from Panthers. He's always been Rog and Roger to you?
Always.
Yeah?
Always. We just called him Rog. Yeah, and, you know, I remember my brother Steve came home from school one day and he said he'd had to write this essay or something about something and the teacher said to him, who's this Rog you keep talking about? and Steve said, he's the bloke who drives the car. So we just always call him Rog and Roger, yeah.
Yeah. Roger passes away in 2017.
Yep.
Merv Cartwright Medal Night, mm-hmm. at Panthers. So two names intrinsically linked there on that night. Difficult time for the family, obviously, but particularly in the lead up as well. I know Roger was in particularly poor health.
Well, he had a stroke. I think it was in 2015 on Melbourne Cup Day, and from then on, you know, it was difficult. But look. Look, he was struggling, I think, well before that. Like, I think he was struggling personally ever since the Temby Inquiry. I remember being in the city one time with him and you know, I just had the sense that there was a lot of weakness there. Like, not weakness, but a sense of being resigned or having given up. So he stroke, then he had a couple more, and Mum couldn't sort of look after him, so we had to find a place to put him. He was in a nursing home down at Cronulla because my brother lived down there. So it was very, he couldn't talk. He could sort of, he could recognise us. Not many people came to visit him. Johnny Lang was one who came down, and Rob Weaver came and visited a few times. So Barry Walsh, of course. But it was very difficult visiting him because it was a one-way conversation, which sort of suited John Lang, who could talk really well. But even he found it very confronting. So we were all with him when he passed away, when he let out his final breath. Sadly, when that happened, I rang Scott McRae, who was emceeing that night and at the awards, and said, told him that it happened. And he came back and said, well, they didn't want to make any announcement at all, which I felt like, I guess I just felt that was part of his disappearing from, yeah.
On that level, are you disappointed, I guess, and I've talked about this in different ways and occasions, but about, I guess, the lack of recognition for Roger today in the Panthers world. Like, would you? I don't think that there is any room or anything named in
no, there isn't.
His honour after the longest serving CEO and essentially the founder of the Mulgoa Road site. Would you have liked to have seen something extra there? Some sort of recognition?
Well, look, he wasn't the sort of person who would seek that. However, I do think his contribution to the Panthers organisation, both for football and for licence club, has been more than significant, and perhaps beyond what any other single person has done. Even though he did it as part of, well, he felt that it was part of a team effort, but he was a leader, and he was a great leader. If I say so myself, people might think that's biased, but I don't think it is too biased. But while it's sort of disappointing that something, I don't think it's disappointing that something's not named after him, but what is disappointing is that there's a lack of acknowledgement. For example, Mum used to get invited to things like the season launch or the presentation night. No longer happens. So, her contribution has also been in some way diminished. And I don't think there's much of a statement anywhere made by anyone about what his contribution has been or how he has been really the foundation of this organisation. And look, it's not that debilitating for any of us.
Sure.
But you look across there or you listen to people speak about certain things, and I can remember someone talking about the history at a presentation night one year about the history of Panthers, and his name wasn't mentioned once. Now, I think it was deliberate, but by a person who had a I don't know, not a very high regard for him, I suppose. But nevertheless, it's those sorts of things. And, I think my response to your article, saying, Roger's not mentioned is part of that. I think you came back and said, well, it doesn't need to be spoken about. Well, I think it's forgotten everywhere.
Yeah, and it's critical, obviously, to honour history of organisations.
Well, you can't really move forward unless you do.
Yeah. 100%. What do you think of Panthers today as a footy team, as a leagues club, when you have a look over there? I mean, I know it's different, and I know it'll never feel like it did when you were heading up the marketing through the 90s.
Well, I haven't been into the club that much. I mean, I went over there for lunch with Mum, probably about a year ago. I've been in a couple of times.
The Carvery's not there anymore.
No, it wasn't there when I was there either. The Carvery was a lot of fun. and I ran into a couple of people I knew, and they were really welcoming, and it was great to see them and so on. And look, I think it's gone through a really difficult period with the licensed club. you know, with the COVID and with issues of financing and so on. But I think there's movement out of that. The team, obviously, there's clearly a really good structure behind that team and a really good culture. I don't know because I'm not in that mix. I don't think I've even seen the academy, right? Okay. So, but I've always liked Ivan Cleary as just the way he carries himself, the way he speaks. So I've always been impressed with that, and I was really pleased that he's the coach, and really the coach is pivotal in how not only the way the team operates on the field, but more importantly how it operates off the field.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know, when Royce became the coach, there was a big shift in the way that team, even though it was through difficult times, there was a big shift in the way that team operated off the field. Mm. And that was carried through with Lange. So, you know, it's fantastic to watch the success of the team. And on the club side, you know, I saw an article, I think it was, it would have been in the Western Weekend, with an interview with Pete Graham, I think.
Yes, yep.
About thinking about what to do with those hectares that are available.
Yeah.
And when I was there, we were thinking about, like, this vacant space is a really pivotal space in Penrith. It's very important. And, of course, that's when we did the project with the Museum of Contemporary Art, the C3 West project, and we had a couple of French artists, one French artist and an architect come out and sort of just have a look as part of that project, like it was a community, creative industries, commercial, three-way partnership. We did a bundle of things, but one of them was to look at how innovative we could be with that parcel of land to really raise the profile of Penrith and to make it something that, you know, brought pride to the Penrith city, basically.
Because one thing Roger did create was space. I mean, buying that, ensuring the Panthers bought that, is space has never been an issue for Panthers.
Well, it will become an issue because a lot of it you can't build on, it's important, and it was really pleasing. You know, when I read the article with Pete Graham, you know, to hear about the planning for 2032, like this is where we want to be. So to me, that says, good, finally, there's some movement. And I think you made the point that the fact that the team's stable, the finances are stable, allows that to happen. You know, I think it looked like we're in good hands there.
You are wearing a Panthers cap, so the following Panthers has obviously continued, still in the blood.
Well, how can you not? Yeah, and that will carry on with my kids and grandkids.
Changing tact, what about life after Panthers? What followed for you? I know you're talking a few different roles, a few different projects, still in that marketing, that ever-changing marketing landscape and world.
Look, I'm not doing a great deal now. I just sort of, I'm on the board of a security company, and I do a bit of work managing their website and doing some communications for them. Really, at the moment, that's all I'm doing. I'm actually sort of, I do a bit of other stuff myself, but it's for myself. So I don't know whether it's a wise thing to do or not, but I'm in the process of taking Jenny Bentley's book, Panthers, Passion and Politics, and trying to, reconfigure it so I could publish it as a blog, but I'm sort of in two. I have great trepidation about it just because of the ghosts that are in there. But by the same token, I think, well, look, it's part of the history. I can expand on some of the things that are in it, some of the good things about the great things that were done at Panthers. And Roger's contribution to that, and it's my way of being a bit cathartic about it, and my way of acknowledging, like when I joined Panthers, it was a great revelation to me. how Roger had done this. I just couldn't. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Like he's my dad, who I'd fight with all the time about a whole bundle of issues. I mean, we got on, but I probably had some of the opinions that some of the people had about, you know, he's like, all he wants is the money. All he's thinking about is the finances. And when I got there, I found out, no, he's all about human dignity, and he's all about developing people. He's all about innovation, and the number of innovations that he put in place was miraculous. Like,
there were some people who, particularly I guess around that footy five period, were, you know, often criticised him for not being about football. He'd rather football wasn't there, and that is obviously because football cost Panthers a lot of money, often a lot. But that doesn't seem to be the case. He was always pretty, you know, pretty passionate about the rugby league side.
He was very, very passionate about the rugby league side. And I think those sorts of issues came right from the start, like right back in, I think it might have been in 1964, and it was before he joined as a full-time employee, but I think he was acting as a voluntary, when the club couldn't pay the players and he had to write a cheque to each of the players for half what their fee was meant to be. Yeah. But he was left on his Pat Malone to do that. And, you know, the guys who created that problem of overspending their budget weren't there. Well, I was at the annual picnic for members, which was held out near, out of Bungool, out on the Hawkesbury, I think where Riverside Oaks is now. So, and from then on, and I remember this when I, you know, when we were growing up in Kingswood, Rod would come home and he'd be tearing his hair out at the overspending that was done in football. So he would get quite cranky about that, and so he would end up in conflict. And I guess that's where that came, and that sort of went through, right through his, and reached its apex in that 45 sort of conflict,
because I guess the other thing is, obviously, as well, for a big chunk of Roger's career, corporate partnership in rugby league wasn't as significant as it is today. I mean, you were there, I guess, when Sanyo came on board, kind of the first real long-term partner that's spending big dollars, and these days, you know, every possible spot of a jersey that can have a logo on it does.
Well, you know, and again, this sort of speaks to Roger's ability to create things that I believe that Panthers was the very first cash sponsorship for sport done by TUI's.
Right, okay.
So he was able to convince TUI's in some... Now, probably because the club was selling a lot of beer, but nevertheless... They're still sponsors, you know. So this is sort of testimony to the sort of impact that he had. And you know, there are other things, like he created the judiciary system now that is used by both the NRL and the AFL.
Sure.
He did a whole lot of work. Like, he was interested in football. He was probably the first one to introduce a coaching panel that, not that it had success, but that focused on having different coaches for different, you know, for a defence and for attack and so on.
Sure, now,
at the time it didn't work, but it was before his time.
Yeah.
But eventually that's exactly what happens. He was probably one of the first to introduce thoughts about psychology, you know, and about how, you know, creating a sort of, using hypnotherapy and imaging for players. Like, there's a story that Phil Gould tells on one of his podcasts. Six Tackles with Gus?
Yes,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, Six Tackles with Gus,
And he talks about Roger hypnotising the players and, you know, they did it for this game. I think it was against the Roosters and it was really successful. And then something happened at the next game. He did it again, but it was a complete failure. Yeah. So, but the idea of that, the impact of the mind on such a physical game, I don't think anyone was thinking about that when Roger was thinking about it.
Yeah.
And he would spend hours upon hours, and occasionally he would come in and do some stuff with the team to see if, you know, it would help them. Mm. So he was definitely not against football, but he was against, I guess, the promiscuous spending that football seemed to be able to to be capable of.
It sparked a lot of dramas over the years. You talked about the one board concept, yep. And then that went away, and now it's back again. Obviously, it exists now, but the gulf, they used to call it the Grand Canyon. Mulgoa Road was the Grand Canyon between the two, and
yeah.
Certainly different eras, and often history repeats itself as well as, sure. as time goes
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I don't know what the structure is there at the moment, but, you know, whatever it is, it certainly seems to be working.
Yeah. Hmm. What about Penrith as a city? I know your mum still lives here,
yeah.
Phyllis. Grown pretty significantly since you grew up. Do you? I mean, if you went and had a look at some of those housing locations now, there's either not be a house there or a much different house.
I have had a look at yeah. where we lived at 1 Guildford Road. It's the same house. I mean, it's changed a little bit, but it's...
same house as there?
Yeah. I mean, it's been added, you know, sure, it's been yeah. sort of additions and some, but there's a yeah. lot more surrounding. There's a lot more surrounding
definitely,
it than,
yeah.
And of course, where we were in Reserve Street and Station Street, that's all been knocked down. As now the is it Nepean Plaza?
Yeah, Nepean Village. Yeah, yeah.
And the property out at Emu Heights, you know, that's changed a fair bit too. I haven't been out there for quite a while, but it used to be, you know, we were the last house. Right at the end,
yeah.
And I think now there's a whole lot of houses out there. I mean, there's still quite a lot of room out there for each of the individual properties. But Penrith, like for me, it's part of me. I still look back and think, wow, that was it's such a great place. Progress has to, you know. There has to be progress, otherwise. But for me, it's still, you know, riding the bike down the river and the roads. It's so hot, the roads are melting, and And look, I still have really close friends who I started kindergarten with, you know. So and we often talk about it. And look, one of your guests here, Bruce Turner. I was in his class, and you know we. No, we have a bit of contact and
Bruce is doing a great job looking at some of the history of
fantastic job
history.
And of course Poker, his uncle, was on the board. Poker was a great man. Like I remember Roger would host a Christmas party for the board, and I can remember Poker, he was a great raconteur. Like he would get on there and get a microphone and start singing and telling jokes, and I had a couple of recordings of him singing and joking at one of those, telling jokes at one of those. I sent it to Bruce, and he was quite grateful.
Yeah, Bruce doing some great work indeed. Question we always ask at the end: how would Max Cowan like to be remembered?
Oh God, it's not something I've ever thought about. I'm not sure that I have any ambition to be remembered, but I suppose as a person who has both creativity and empathy. Yeah, it's as simple as that. But I would like Roger to be remembered. And I think with all the success of the club now, you know, both on the field and off the field, you know, I just think it'd be fantastic if there was some sort of acknowledgement of his contribution to that. Like, because in the Fair Income Stakes, without that purchase of that Mulgoa Road, and then without the expansion of the club, the club's portfolio of land across the state, this would not be here. It wouldn't have happened.
It is an extraordinary legacy and an incredible story as well, from the 60s right up until his retirement in 2005, and a remarkable life in Penrith and a remarkable family in Penrith. Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Troy. It's been a great pleasure.
And I hope you...
And you've made it really easy. Thanks.
Ah, thank you very much, and thank you again. And I hope you enjoyed our chat. On the Record is produced by the Western Weekender and recorded at Studio 103 in Penrith. To hear future episodes, search Western Weekender wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure you hit subscribe. Check out westernweekender.com.au, and we'll see you next time.